Hey, everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because it's our annual flashback roundup episode, and we're talking about A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, which means I'm joined by that movie's biggest fan, Adam Risky. Hi, Adam.
Hello. In the words of Amanda Kruger, I must be released from my earthly prison.
Yes.
That's a line of dialogue in this movie.
It's a well-written film.
Yeah.
Is, I think, the point that you're making?
I just think that it's got some tasty lines, and that is number one up there.
Something, 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 bitch is another good one.
Oh, yeah. They do that a few times.
He says bitch a lot in this movie.
I like when... So, of course, as requisite with any rewatch of a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, you watch the segment of Never Sleep Again.
I did
that
too.
Corresponds with the movie. So I watched that, but then I rewound too far on my Amazon rental or okay. My Amazon purchase. So I caught like the 4 minutes where they talk about Freddy's nightmares.
Yes.
And William Malone's just like, and I had Robert Englund record a birthday message for my daughter. And even in the birthday message, Robert Englund calls her a bitch. And I'm just like, Bob, it's okay.
It was his fallback.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing?
I'm good. You know, just like going through like a metaphysical crisis with
sure.
movies, but other than that,
everything's great.
Everything else is great. I don't know what movies are anymore. I thought during the pandemic that it was just like, you know, this is just a weird patch,
and right, things right.
not maybe not go back to normal, but there'll be a new normal that resembles the old normal. But no, like, I swear, it's like pod people came down.
This is the new normal.
And they're running Hollywood now.
Right.
And they're aliens, and they think they know what a movie is, but they don't. And, like, they keep mass producing, like, all this garbage that's just, like, just trying to get, like, a single. Like,
yeah.
Nothing's trying to hit a home run anymore. And, like, I love movies, and it's really making me annoyed. And when I watched Nightmare on Elm Street 5, which probably got, like, 0 stars from 50% of the
yes.
nation's critics
Hold
in
on,
1989.
I'm gonna look up the Rotten Tomatoes score.
I'm sitting there and I'm just like, this is so much better than anything that's out now.
Well, and we'll get to that, obviously, yeah. because you and I are defenders of this movie.
Yeah.
It has a 29% critic score and a 31% audience score.
Come on, audiences, get
yeah.
on the bus.
It is not particularly liked. But speaking of movies, have you seen anything lately? I
yeah.
won't even say good. I'll just say, have you seen anything lately?
I've got 2 good ones and 4 that I'm not that big of a fan of. So I'll
two
talk
good
about
ones
the
is
two
awesome.
Good ones.
Yeah.
yeah. Okay, so I saw Pig.
Yeah, you did.
Did you see Pig?
I did.
I thought Pig was cool. I heard in advance that it was like a just really kind of quirky movie, and that it was one of the charms of it is that you won't know where it's going as you're watching it.
Absolutely.
And even though I knew that going in, I really didn't know as I was watching.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, like some wow, like some of these,
wow,
wow, that's great, wow. Nick Cage, wow.
Ka-chow.
Ka-chow. Yeah. Why didn't Lightning McQueen do Flashback Weekend if we got the Halloween wagon? Do you think next year?
Next year it'll be.
Okay.
Lightning
we'll
McQueen.
It'll be like a tire print for autographs.
Ka-chow. Ka-chow. Lightning McQueen.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so I thought, like, Pig was just great, and the there's like a scene right in the middle of the movie where him and Alex Wolff, I think it's Alex Wolff, not Nat Wolff. I keep confusing.
I believe
two.
You're correct.
Okay, him and Alex Wolff are in a restaurant, and one
that
of his
scene is amazing.
One of Nicolas Cage's former restaurant employees is now running the show at this restaurant, and they have a conversation, and it is like so brutal if it wasn't so helpful,
right?
And it's just a beautifully written scene.
Yep.
And there's so many little details like with they're not called like attention to, but if you're paying attention, like Nat Wolff is listening to like an instructional CD about how to appreciate classical music, and it's like that says everything about like about this guy, and it's like endearing but also so pathetic,
right.
And the whole movie is just like that, and like it's got like, you know, an awesome like Adam Arkin performance, and it's just
good
like,
to see him again.
Yeah, the Halloween H2O is, you know, yeah. George Clooney proxy Adam Arkin. And I just really enjoyed the hell out of it. And I think like where it ends is just really kind of beautiful. And it's, was it an A24 movie or was it Neon?
It's Neon.
That's why I liked it. So go see Pig.
It's my favorite movie that I've seen this year.
Yeah, it's up there for me.
By the time you hear this, it will actually be available to rent or own on VOD, because I think on Tuesday,
okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
Nice.
It's going to be available digitally.
Yeah.
Because even the theaters around us that are showing it, by week two, they were down to like one show a day. So it might be hard to see now,
mm-hmm.
but you can watch it digitally. And I highly recommend everyone do. And then don't be surprised that Nicolas Cage is great in it, because he's always great. But every critic was like, yeah, get this. I'm giving a Nicolas Cage movie 4 stars in 2021. Can you believe it? I'm like, yeah, I can fucking believe it.
Yeah. Now we got to get Travolta to get his version of a pig.
What will it be?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he thought it was a love song
Long. What's the last great Travolta performance? Get Shorty?
No. I mean, I think he's given great performances in bad movies before.
Okay.
So I don't know if this is the right example, but I mean, like, I could even go to, like, The Forger. I think he's pretty good
in
it.
Oh, he's good
in
The Forger,
He's good in,
he's good in stuff. I just don't know what his last, like, great performance would
be. Yeah. Like, where you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Because ever since, like, about, okay, I got it. It's Primary Colors.
Oh, yeah, he's good in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably Primary Colors.
I like that movie.
It is a good movie.
Yeah.
Kathy Bates is awesome in that movie.
She is.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like that movie.
It's good. Yeah, so we're going to do a Primary Colors podcast instead. And then I liked Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage.
Oh, boy.
That is sort of like a docuseries more than a movie, but it's a feature. So, but that's on HBO Max. And that movie, like, really kind of spun my top, so to speak, where, like, I was part of that. I wasn't, you know, they were describing like the people at Woodstock were about like 23 years old on average, something like early 20s. I was 17 in 99, and but like all that male misogyny, like ugliness, was what I experienced when I was in college. And
right.
It was all about, you know, reading Maxim and Girls Gone Wild and like,
gosh, isn't that
binge
so weird?
Drinking
and all
this
was
stuff like that, and then like how angry the music is and everything, and like when you're in it like, and also I felt like DiCaprio in The Departed, where I was on both sides, where I was just like, I was a TRL kid and I was super into the teen pop, like with Aguilera and Britney Spears and NSYNC and like, I don't know. Although with the boy bands at the time, I was a 98 Degrees man.
Mm.
Good stuff, that Nick Lachey.
If you say so.
Yeah. But then, like, you know, I still liked the, you know, XM Turbo music. Like,
right.
I didn't love Korn. I didn't love Marilyn Manson. I didn't love Limp Bizkit. But there was, like, a lot of songs of theirs that I did like. And it kind of, you know, messed me up when I was watching that movie, because it was, like, something that I like laid dormant in my mind for such a long time. And I was just like, oh no, like this was so much more awful than I thought in the moment. And then it kind of made me think back, like I was not a bad guy back then, but I was just like, there were certain moments I'm not proud of either. And I'm just like, fuck, like, like it just made me feel like really remorseful and sad in a way that I was not expecting. I was just expecting kind of this, like, you know, fire festival type of documentary,
right.
Where it was just like an autopsy of the show, which it kind of was. But it was really, really something. And man, is it interesting to counterpoint the Woodstock 69 documentary to the Woodstock 99 documentary, specifically with the organizer, that co-founder.
Yes.
Because in 69, you're just like, you know, this guy's cool. And like, this guy's, right. you know, like putting right. on this great show. Right. And then you see like the evilness that grew like right. over 30 years right. and the greed and just the, like, you know,
well,
the
it's just
boomer
so cynical.
Gone bad cynicalness and yeah. stuff like that. So it's like they describe it near the beginning of the movie where they're just like, you know, it's like hanging out with Willy Wonka. And at first you think like, oh, it's great, I'm going to hang out with Willy Wonka. And then 10 minutes later, you're just like, oh God, this guy's insane. So I highly recommend that documentary. I think it's really good.
They make a point of saying in the documentary that Woodstock 69 wasn't as rose-colored as the documentary yeah. makes it out to be. Mm-hmm. And I've read a lot of criticism of the Woodstock 99 documentary, which I, too, really enjoyed and yeah. was fascinated by as somebody who really dropped out of the music scene probably 2 years before that and just was not paying attention. Like, Woodstock 94, totally on my radar. Yeah. 99, not even a little bit. Yeah. So, so much of that was, like, new to me. A lot of criticism that, like, the documentary, you know, lays blame at the feet of the bands and the, you know, the Limp Bizkit and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and it says that they just whipped everyone up into a frenzy and that's not fair, and it was this confluence of all these different events, that the documentary is exploitative because it never misses an opportunity to show, like, a topless girl. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think it's a little bit too, a little too PC of a criticism. I think, like, okay. if you're just personally, like, I think if you're going to document what was there, I mean, it's on video, it's like stuff that actually sure, happened. Yeah. So, and I don't think that any of the, you know, I'm putting myself in the minds of the filmmakers right now, but I didn't watch any of the stuff with the naked girls and see it as titillation in any way. Like, I didn't see, like, it was ugly.
Yeah.
Like, you're fearful for these women. Right, like, you're right. immediately fearful. There was no, like, it was what I have dubbed crisis nudes. It's like, you're scared. It's not, like, yeah. meant to arouse you or turn you on. As far as, like, the bands and everything like that, can't both be true? Like, I mean, like, right. I think, like, it's also, you know, you know, the bands aren't there the whole time. They're not there for, like, all 3 days of the festival and everything like that. So, like, you know, maybe they're there for a couple hours before their sets or, like, after their set for a little while and everything like that. But, I mean, like, as an accumulation of events and them being in the moment and kind of seeing what was going on, I mean, you can't claim innocent to certain things. Right, like, right. and... You know, I think the criticisms of Limp Bizkit and Red Hot Chili Pepper, who are two bands that I more like than don't, especially Chili Peppers. Yeah, they did some shitty stuff that day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I don't think that it's laying some blame, but I don't think it's laying entirely okay. the blame.
All right.
Yeah. Cool, cool. What did you think with those points?
I try to stay out of yeah. all of that debate
yeah.
And just make up my own mind. And I thought the movie was this fascinating examination. And is it one-sided or is it a skewed perspective? Maybe. But as you said,
yeah.
just what it showed me on video was disturbing and upsetting and was like, and or the interview that that guy gives where he talks about like, the girls basically blaming the women for being assaulted.
Horrible.
Right.
Horrible.
I mean, yeah. all, that shit's on film. Like yeah. that's not the documentary making that up. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I saw another documentary, which I wasn't expecting a whole lot from, but, and I got basically what I expected out of it, which was Hail to the Deadites, the Evil Dead fan
yeah.
documentary. Did you see that?
No, I'm done with fan documentaries. Yeah. I think.
It's really basic, like, with, you know, we're gonna talk to a girl who collects the toys and we're gonna
really?
Talk to, like, yeah, it's like, or we're gonna talk to the guy who has the who proposed to his fiance at Cinema Wasteland convention in like what looks like a closet like Tim Sullivan, who's the makeup guy from Evil Dead, has like all of his stuff. It's just like, it's, but there's a really funny button at the end of the movie where they make this big deal for like 15 minutes of like, you know, this is them proposing and they're getting, you know, Tim Sullivan to help and everything. And they invited him to the wedding and whatnot. And then they did the, you know, the where are they now type of thing at the end. And it says these two were married for a year and then divorced. And it was oh, God. So, like, that's the moment where it went from the Morgan Spurlock Comic-Con documentary to, like, rock a fire explosion for just a minute. Where I was just like, yes. I was, like, reveling almost in, like, the fact
that... Do they have an Evil Dead-themed divorce?
I wish. Yeah. No. And... there's a couple of moments, like, actually some of the most interesting stuff is like in the end credits where they're like talking to Bruce Campbell and they're just like asking him stuff. And they ask him like, you know, like what, you know, what is your interpretation or like experience, like meeting all these fans and everything. And he has some like kind of insightful, interesting answers to it because he's like, I don't understand it in most cases because like these people will wait like 2 hours to meet me. But then when they go up there, they can't say anything. Like, yeah. They just don't, they don't know what to talk about, right, or like, they're right. Just too scared to talk to me and stuff like that. And he's just like, and he's kind of like, well, what are you doing? And like, as somebody who's met people at conventions, sometimes the desire to meet somebody overmatches that you have anything to say to them.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It's kind of tough. And it's surprising sometimes, like, you expect like a really positive interaction with like celebrity A, and then like out of nowhere you're just like, oh well, this person's only been in this one movie and I kind of like it, but like I'm getting it to fill out the rest of the poster because I got somebody else's autograph from this movie.
Yeah.
Then you talk to them and it's just like, wow, what a great person. Yes. And like it's like the total con bump situation.
Right.
And you just can never tell. And then he was saying how, you know, like basically, like, fan interactions can have, they can be causes for good and evil, where he's just like, if you're stalking me, that's evil. Like, leave me alone. But if you wrote me a letter saying, you know, you decided, you know, not to kill yourself because you saw an episode of Briscoe County Jr., that's, like, something that sticks with me and I'm really proud of, and it makes me feel great that I'm doing what I'm doing.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's just, like, it's kind of not, you know, shocking revelations or anything like that, but to hear him, because he's so tied to the convention experience.
Right. Hearing he's like him, the face of fandom.
Exactly. Like hearing him sort of reflect on that in a non-snarky way and like a really sincere way was interesting because you don't really get that from him all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, that's cool.
So maybe I do like it a little bit.
Well, it's got some good stuff in it.
It's got some good stuff in it.
And it's also a fan documentary.
Yeah. And then the movies that kind of put me through the tailspin of, like, what are movies...
Okay.
...is Space Jam, A New Legacy, which I thankfully didn't see in a theater, because I don't think I would have ever gone back to a theater.
We needed a movie to make Space Jam look like a masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from the jump, it's just a terrible sequel to Space Jam, because it almost is, like... accidentally poetic in the way that the opening credits roll out. Because, okay, in Space Jam, Michael Jordan, Bulls hero. Michael Jordan, icon. Michael Jordan, best basketball player of all time. In Space Jam, A New Legacy, LeBron, mercenary, changing teams, chasing the ring, but, like, there's no loyalty there. Like, the Toon Squad might as well be, like, his team after the Lakers. Like, he's just stopping by. And even, like, Don Cheadle at one point says to, like, LeBron's son, he's just basically says something like, well, how long is he going to really be on the Lakers for?
Right.
And LeBron is just, he kind of is, like, the sports equivalent of Dwayne Johnson, where, like, he just, like, you don't want to hate him, but you kind of, like, at least for me, it's just like Rob describes it perfectly with, like, Dwayne Johnson, where it was just like, he's always acting above the things that he's in. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's always, like, Dwayne Johnson's agent. Like, it's like, just be sincere, be the guy from Walking Tall again, please. And then with Space Jam, it's just like, I mean, the IP thing has been talked about to death. It's ridiculous. Like, it just makes you feel... like such a horror, like forever enjoying anything Matrix or Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's so cynical. It's just throwing
or
in your
Looney
face
Tunes.
Or Looney Tunes. Yeah, especially Looney Tunes. It's just throwing in your face like how artistry just doesn't mean anything anymore, especially to that studio, apparently, if they're going to release this movie.
It's such a time capsule movie because I think it's inadvertently a movie that so clearly identifies the problem with everything that we're getting in movies right now.
Yeah.
It is the death of movies.
It really does feel like that.
Yeah.
Like, and people will chalk it up. Some people will just chalk it up. It's like, oh, it's just a kid's movie. It's for kids. It's like,
that makes it worse.
I wouldn't even want. Yeah. Why would you ever want to show your kids this? And like the level of humor is so stupid in this movie because it's just
Notorious P.I.G.
Well, I forget.
See, Notorious P sounds like B.
Yeah.
And then he raps.
Okay. Two things.
That
would
have been a funny joke in 1996.
Yeah. So who's that joke for? That joke's for people our age, which we're not going to think it's funny. One.
No.
And two, like, this is what's going on in Hollywood now. It's just like they make movies that would have been aimed at 10-year-olds, but now that's what is adult entertainment. Like, this is adult entertainment. Like, it's more so than a kid's movie because it's aiming at like people our age.
Right.
And like the level of humor is just like Wile E. Coyote wouldn't be in Mad Max. There's not even a joke. It's just like grandma wouldn't be in The Matrix.
But it's funny because she's older and also a cartoon. Honestly, the movie argues against its own existence in the first 10 minutes where we get a scene of LeBron James in like a boardroom being pitched what is essentially the idea for Space Jam: A New Legacy. Just like, hey, what if we put you in all of our properties?
Yeah.
And he says, that's a terrible idea. I don't want to do that. And then the rest of the movie is that idea.
Yeah. And I don't think LeBron is like as, you know, comedy adept to know that that's like that it was meant to be satirical at all, because it doesn't come across as satirical.
No, I don't think it's meant to be satirical.
Yeah.
I think they're just unaware of what they're doing, or they don't care.
Well, and also it's just like the level of sophistication with their IP is, let's put them on the baseline waving their arms or clapping or like laughing. And that's like you or I, you know, could have walked onto that set and done any of those parts. It's crazy. And when you were mentioning the thing in the first 10 minutes, another thing that struck me was the movie's thesis ostensibly is let your kids follow their own passions.
Right.
However, LeBron, as a kid, apparently just wanted to play his Game Boy, didn't want to play basketball.
Right.
But when his basketball coach was just like, knucklehead, put down the video game, play basketball, he became the best basketball player of his generation.
Right.
So it's like, well, what are you trying to say then?
Right.
So, I don't know. It was such a depressing movie. It's by far the worst movie of this year, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, it's worse than Artemis Fowl. Which
I didn't see Artemis Fowl.
Was possible.
yeah, again, it makes you appreciate Looney Tunes back in action even more, which Joe Dante made specifically because Space Jam was so terrible.
But
he was like, well, what if we made an actual Looney Tunes movie?
Yeah.
And then nobody went to see it. And now, 18 years later, we get Space Jam, A New Legacy, and it's making Space Jam look great.
Yeah. And then all these people come out of the woodworks with, is in Lola Bunny Hot, and it's just like, I'm embarrassed that you're telling me this, and I'm embarrassed that I'm the person you're telling me this to, or telling this to.
They were upset that they made her not hot, right? That was the thing?
Jeez. I don't know.
They desexualized Lola Bunny, and then people were upset and crying, like, woke culture and stuff.
Like, people need to keep these
thoughts
to themselves.
I want a bunny
that
I want to fuck.
It's like, I've moved on because people won't fuck me. So now, I don't think a real bunny would fuck me.
Bring back my bunny boner.
I want animated, but CGI animated. I don't want that hand-drawn stuff. Too many paper cuts.
I can't jerk off to cell animation.
It's like, I was trying to jerk off to Lola Bunny in the basketball scenes, but then I caught a guy dressed up as Danny DeVito's penguin, and I was like, what is going on here?
But then there's also the Burgess Meredith penguin. What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, like, you know, we're not the first ones to mention this, but like the Droogs from Clockwork Orange, so, you know, rapists and murderers.
Right.
In Space Jam.
In kids movie. Space kids Jam. Movie. Which yeah. I didn't even put together until I listened to another podcast, Space Jam, a movie that does not take place in space.
No.
It takes place in virtual reality.
Directed by Malcolm D. Lee, who has made good movies and needs to fire his agent.
Yeah.
And then the other one that got me really annoyed was the Fear Street trilogy.
Uh-oh.
And I went into it, I liked 94 until I thought about it for 2 minutes, and then I didn't like 94.
Okay.
The big thing, okay, by the third one, it's just interminable. Like, I just was like, what are we doing? Like, all these Netflix movies are ephemeral, so, like, your answer is to make three ephemeral ones that come out in three successive weeks that we're all going to forget. Like, what a waste of time and effort, yeah. First. And second is just, like, okay, why, like... If you want to watch a 90s slasher, which, by the way, they have it as 94, when these types of slashers were in vogue 96 and later, which
right,
didn't make a lot
84.
Of sense. Yeah. But then they had, like, 78, when these were, like, more early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But my point being, if you want to watch a 90s slasher, then just watch a 90s slasher. If you want to watch an 80s slasher, watch an 80s slasher. If you want to watch a movie from 1666... I'm sure it's on TCM.
Or Tubi.
Or Tubi. Or, like, movies, exclamation mark. But...
Movies was showing Friday the 13th Part 3 once, and I was so yeah. excited, because I was
at
like,
that?
2 in the morning. And
don't you love that
like,
one, yeah.
I've stumbled on a surprise.
Yeah, and then you, like, are checking the channel guide for that channel for, like, 2 weeks,
yes,
where you're
course.
Just like, what other gems
what
are
else
on
do they are they showing that I own and could watch anytime?
Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know, I thought 94 was the best of the three, but like so much of it had a feeling of the kid who's never heard the band but likes the shirt at Target and mm-hmm. is going to wear it mm-hmm. because I'm a fan of Nirvana now. And it's just like, everybody felt like, I described it to you like, and this is kind of unkind, but this is how I felt. It was just... It felt like a high school play at times where it was just like, and we all have to clap for them or they're going to cry and have to go to therapy. It's just like, like, this is garbage. Like, there's some stuff where, I'm sorry this is like soapbox city on this episode, but like, I'm just riled up today. There's some stuff, like, there's some cool effects, like in 94, like when the girl's head goes through the bread slicer. It's just like,
that was intense.
That's intense. And like, there's some interesting stuff there, but I mean, what are we even doing here? Like, and then I go on Rotten Tomatoes, and these movies are like 80%, 90%, yeah. And it's just like, do I have to blame everybody for like the shittiness of modern movies? Because if 80 out of 100 of you say, yeah, good, then what motivation does anybody have right. to make a better movie? Like, you have to be better arbiters of this shit. And I'm so mad at audiences for just giving a pass to fucking anything nowadays. All right, I'm done.
People are excited to have new horror movies. People are excited to have new horror movies that they can just watch in their home. They're yeah. excited to have this trilogy, and the way that it was rolled out was like, this is neat. I get a new movie every Friday.
Yeah.
I'm excited that it's directed by a woman, which I get. I'm excited that there's a homosexual relationship at the center. That's... All this stuff is like, this is progress. This is good.
Yeah.
To me, the movies, and I only watched the first two. I still haven't watched 1666.
Yeah.
I thought the first two were just okay. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't hate them,
yeah.
but they were, like you said, ephemeral. And not movies that I can see myself going back to, because, like, 1994, with the exception of some of the music that they play, there's nothing about it that needs to be in 1994. It just feels like an 80s slasher.
Yeah.
And same with 1978. You know, mm-hmm. it feels like a Friday the 13th. A lesser Friday the 13th clone.
Yeah.
So I'll just watch a Friday the 13th movie, or I'll watch like fucking Final Exam or something.
Or The
like.
Burning or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm with you. I'm rarely impressed by the thing that feels like something else.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's more going on, because I look at something like Turbo Kid, and Turbo Kid yeah. is like, hey, doesn't this feel like something from the 80s? But there's also, like, great characters and
it's
tons of heart.
And, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's something there. There's characters in a relationship that brings me back more so than just something like Lost After Dark, which is, like, this movie that came out a couple years ago that just feels like the most generic 80s slasher, and they do a good job of making it feel like the most generic 80s slasher. But if I'm going to watch a generic 80s slasher, I'll just watch one that was made in 1982.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, the best thing I can say about it is, like you said, you know, it's a woman director who got to direct three horror movies.
And it's Lee Janiak. And she made Honeymoon. That was good.
Honeymoon's really good. Yeah. And then... I love that it's a same sex couple. I just wish it was a better couple. Like,
sure,
I don't care. Like that, right. Like you've done half the work. Like, you have to write good characters.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't. You can't get like bonus points just because of that.
Right.
So I don't know. I just want better movies, and I don't know who's gonna make them. Like, if it's not the studios and it's not the streaming services, then, like, do I have to just wait for one pig every summer? And that I got that in 95 with Babe, and I got that in 2021 with Pig.
This is where I was at. I had just finished watching Jolt, that new Amazon Kate Beckinsale movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not crazy about it, and a lot of people online are really loving it. And I'm just like, oh, I'm incapable of liking anything. And then I think like a day or two later, I saw Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, here's something for me, because I, too, am feeling like everything is Gunpowder Milkshake. Everything is like, I don't like this, I don't care. And now I'm back to it, because the first movie I'll talk about is Jungle Cruise,
okay,
which came out this past weekend, and isn't the worst, but like should be so much better. I thought Rob's review was really good, because he really zeroed in on the movie has a Dwayne Johnson problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, I think, fundamentally miscast. The movie needs 1984 Michael Douglas, not 2021 Dwayne Johnson.
Is he supposed to be like a romantic lead?
Yes, which is part of the problem too, because
he's sexless. Thank you. Yeah, there's nothing about him that, like, it's kind of amazing how few movies have ever had him be the boyfriend, the husband,
right,
stuff like that. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jungle Cruise starts out okay. Emily Blunt is really, really good, and the movie is further evidence that, like, she can make anything work.
Yeah.
But all it made me want to do was watch Edge of Tomorrow, Pirates of the Caribbean,
mm-hmm,
and fucking Aguirre, the Wrath of God. Because Aguirre is a character in the movie played by Edgar Ramirez. It goes to these weird places. It introduces supernatural elements that it doesn't need.
Mm-hmm.
The action is a lot of, like, CG nonsense.
That's too bad.
Except for Emily Blunt shining, there's very little about the movie that I can recommend, except that it's, like, okay. It's, like, as good as, like, the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Okay. Which, on Stranger Tides.
Yeah. That movie's not good.
No, that's the worst of them.
I agree.
Yeah.
Maybe it's as good as the fifth one.
I kind of like the fifth one.
I kind of do, too.
It's got moments.
So maybe I'll say it's as good as the fourth one.
This could have been an Edge of Tomorrow reunion. Jungle Cruise, Tom Cruise.
Oh, I like
what
you did
there. What are we doing?
I don't know.
He would have been perfectly cast on that, too.
Nobody's thinking at all.
No.
Although
there are algorithms picking out directors and actors now, so that we got that to look forward to.
Erica and I went to see Val.
Apparently
we couldn't wait until it showed up on Amazon in like 2 days.
Were there many people in the theater?
We were the only ones.
Oh, okay.
It was like an afternoon showing on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we had the theater to ourselves.
Okay.
It's pretty great. I mean, it's basically just constructed of, he is somebody who has videotaped his entire life.
Yeah.
So it's basically just home movies, mm-hmm, and then intercut with some present day stuff, which is incredibly depressing because I didn't realize how bad his speaking situation was.
Did you ever see The Snowman?
No.
With Michael Fassbender?
Is that I Gave You All the Clues?
Yeah.
No, I never did.
So Val Kilmer has like a cameo in it, and it's basically, he's like the guy that Michael Fassbender is playing now, but like he was on the case before, and it's like a flashback. This is where you're going to end up if like you keep going down this road, Michael Fassbender. And Val Kilmer's like speaking in his natural voice, like after the surgeries and stuff. And that was so jarring to me because like I hadn't seen him in a movie in a long time. And I thought that it was dubbed. I thought it was like some kind of a, like an audio trick, but like, no, yeah, it's really sad.
I'm glad he's alive. He's healthy. He's doing well.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. He wrote a book like a year or two ago that I've read like a few chapters of. Like it was something I read a lot when I was like at the drive-in and waiting for movies last summer. And I just love like his observations and styles of writing with some of the stuff, because he'll like have like a chapter where he just stops cold, where he's just like, I dated Cher, and let me talk for 15 pages about why Cher is just the best. And it's just like, he seems such a, or like, I remember one time I heard a story about him where he met Kate Blanchett, or he worked with Kate Blanchett, and he like loved her so much that he basically was just like calling Kate Blanchett's husband and being like, man, you got it good. Like, it was just like, and it wasn't anything like he was trying to steal her. Right. It was just like, he was just so in awe, and he's just like, can you believe how great she is? And like, good for you, man. And so I don't know. It's so funny. And then like to hear it kind of counterpointed with, like what a dick he apparently was for such a long time.
Well, that's the thing, is that for years, all I heard was Val Kilmer is difficult. Val Kilmer is a prima donna. Val Kilmer is an asshole. And so I went into this documentary sort of expecting that. And he's not that, at least in the documentary. And surely he went through that period. He talks about the Island of Dr. Moreau, and like he was in a dark place. He was getting divorced. He was unhappy with the change in directors. Mm-hmm. He was unhappy that Frankenheimer wouldn't let Marlon Brando have any ideas because Marlon Brando was his idol, so he decided to just be an asshole, and he was an asshole. But it's interesting because it kind of goes movie by movie. They spend a little bit of time on Batman Forever, so they're really happy about that. And then at a certain point, it just kind of stops and jumps through a bunch of movies, and I'm like, no, I want to hear you talk about that. Can you slow down? Because I didn't, you know, I forget that like Val Kilmer's in so many good movies.
Yeah.
And he's always great. Mm-hmm. It made me want to rewatch The Saint. That's how much I liked it.
Don't rewatch
The Saint. Which
I
haven't seen since opening weekend.
I rewatched it like maybe 10 years ago. I had like a Val Kilmer marathon with some friends.
That's a good idea.
Like once a month, like, me and my my friends from my comedy days, we would like, we're like, let's get together at John's and just watch like 8 Christian Slater movies. And like, it
was
so
a good idea.
It was pretty great. And we did that with Val Kilmer. One thing that I loved about, I think he says it in the book, or it might have been in an interview, but they asked him, like, you know, why did you do the movie Heat? And his and of course, like, it's like it's a no-brainer. But, like, his answer was so sweet. It was just, like, because I wanted to call, I wanted to be friends with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. I wanted to be able to call them Al and Bob. And I'm just like, aw. It was like he didn't want to, them just to be acting legends to him or peers. He wanted to be their friends. So I was just like, aw.
When they showed the clips from Heat in the documentary, Erica turns to me and goes, we're watching this tonight.
Yeah.
Because all you need is 5 minutes of Heat. And you're like, I got to watch the rest of Heat.
Heat is a masterpiece.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful, wonderful movie. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And then one more briefly. Well, we can skip it. I was going to talk about Old because I know you saw Old.
I had it on my list too, but I just didn't. I skipped it too. So.
All right, let's skip it.
Yeah. I liked it a little bit more than you did, but I liked it just because it's weird Shyamalan.
I desperately want to like it more. Yeah. It just made me like want to go back and rewatch a bunch of his stuff. And so like last night we were watching Signs. We didn't get to finish it because my son had to leave.
Yeah.
Signs is so good.
Signs is great.
Signs is so good.
Signs is what A Quiet Place aspires to be.
It's, I think it's so good. And,
Is that your favorite of his?
It might be. As I was watching it last night, we didn't get to the end, and obviously people have issues with the end, but like,
I like the end.
I've never really had a problem with it either, but as we're watching it, just the photography and the music and the performances, I was like, this might be his best movie.
Those opening credits are pretty great too.
I love them.
Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs has given him a lifetime pass for me. Like, even if everything else is bad, like, I'm just like, but I want to watch them because I want to be like,
oh, for sure.
I want to revisit them and like pore over them. Even if they're like, I know Lady in the Water is never going to be good every time I watch it. But like, I sometimes just feel like basking in the whateverness of this guy because he's so specific.
Right.
Like there's nobody aping him because how do you ape this guy? Because he's nuts. but in a good way. He's, like, he's sweet.
He's an original.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just was like,
old doesn't work.
Wishing that he had made some different choices on old. Not all different choices, but some different choices.
Did you think the pre-Beach stuff was just bad writing and bad directing, or do you think it was purposely off because he was setting up that things were going to be off later in the movie? That's something I kept mulling over because it was so obviously bad, I thought.
Yeah,
I don't
think that's deliberate.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, the writing throughout, I think, is pretty clumsy and not great. And I think that's my biggest issue with the movie, is that the writing is very frustrating.
Yeah.
But I'll definitely revisit it. And I've been wanting to rewatch Lady in the Water and maybe write something about it.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, is where things really jump off. Because I'll even take 3/4 of the village.
I will, too. Yeah. Did you ever read that book, like The Man Who Hears Voices?
Oh, yeah. I read it before Lady in the Water came out.
I read it, too, and it was fascinating. But
it was like a book-length apology.
Yeah.
Like, if you like this movie, it's because I'm a genius. But if you don't like this movie, it's because they wouldn't let me make the movie that I wanted to make.
Yeah. And it's...
They doubted me, and I changed studios.
Yeah, I remember, like, part of it was, you know, after Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, Disney's just like, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And then they were like, with The Village, they're just like, can we make a suggestion or two? Like, in your best interest, can we make a suggestion or two? And he was just like, no, I'm changing studios. Yeah. I'm going where Bugs Bunny sacrifices himself.
R.I.P. Bugs.
Yeah. The passion of the Bugs.
Let's talk about Flashback.
Yeah.
It was this past weekend at a new location here in Chicago. It's the annual horror convention put on in Chicago by Mike and Mia Kurz.
Mm-hmm.
They had a new hotel, a bigger space.
Yeah, much bigger space.
Which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to be back at a convention.
Yeah.
After taking a year off for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on Flashback?
Overall, I had a really good time. I was kind of like getting my bearings. I went 2 days. I went on Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. And then I went with my friend Nathan, who I'm shouting out because he listens to the show. So,
hey,
hi, Nathan.
Nathan.
How's it going? Thank you for going with me to this Flashback on Saturday.
thank you for the picture of the car.
Thank you for the picture of the Halloween wagon, which I don't believe was the real Halloween wagon. But it had an agent, which I could not believe.
I represent the Halloween wagon.
Yeah. It's just like, I used to do clowns and COVID hit, and now I got to do inanimates. So
I represent the car from Maximum Overdrive.
I represent Lola Bunny, but only the cartoon one, not the CG animated one. Yeah. So I'll pause there for a second because, okay, so one of the top billed guests was the wagon from Halloween that Michael Myers lifts from Dr. Loomis.
It took up an entire corner of the ballroom.
It took up the entire corner of the ballroom by the other guests who were there from mainly Halloween 1978.
Yeah.
And my friend Nathan was just like, let's go take a picture with it, because there was a guy dressed up like Michael Myers who would stand there with like a plastic knife and pretend to stab one of you. So I was like, all right, I'll only do it if you really want to do it, because like I don't want to chip in any money for this one. So if you really want to do it, it's like it's kind of all on you. He's just like, no, I really want to do it. And he's just like, how much do you think it costs? And I was just like, I don't know, like $10.
Yeah, I would guess like, 20.
Yeah. So I walk up there. It says stand outside the carts $40.
Good
to
Lord.
Sit inside the cart $60. So I was like, are you sure? Like, you don't want to meet somebody, like a person. Like, you want to just do... And he's just like, no, this is my first convention. I want it as a keepsake. And I'm just like, I respect that. That's great.
Yep.
I'm so happy that you're having a good time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's mark the occasion. So we went over there, paid the $40, did the picture in front of the Halloween wagon. It was super awkward because there's a guy standing behind me with a knife drawn to my chest pretending to be Michael Myers. I started laughing out of nervousness. And then he just says something to me. He like whispers it. He says something like,
I love you.
That would have been more normal than what he said. He says something like, keep it together. Or something like, keep it inside. And I was just like, Michael Myers doesn't talk. And then, like, I just imagine, like, he's stabbing the guy with the glasses and stuff like that right. in Halloween 78, where he's just like, keep it together, keep it together. So, that was interesting. The convention, like, had, there's always, like, these moments that you just don't expect that, like, make the occasion. Like,
right.
make the experience better. Like, I think my favorite moment of the entire weekend, it wasn't meeting the people from Killer Clowns, it wasn't even any of your panels, it was standing in the hallway with you and Dan Geyer, the film critic from the Daily Herald, comes up, a guy that I've been reading since I was 5.
Yeah.
A guy who is up there with Gene Siskel, Roger Ebert in terms of, like, formative critics of my yeah. of my youth, comes up to me and says, Adam Riske, I know I've heard that name before. Where have I heard that name before? And I said, I don't know. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of yours and everything. And I'm on Patrick's show and, you know, I write for them. So maybe it's that. And he's just like, no. He's like, do you write books?
He said, I've read some of your
books. He's like, I've read some of your books. And I'm just like, I don't write any books. He's just like, are you sure you don't write any books? And I'm just like, I definitely have not written any books. He's like, good, because I don't like those books at all. And then I was just like, and then it just became this whole thing where we had like this really fun kind of like back and forth where I was like, and then when he was walking away, I'm just like, I'm sorry I didn't write those books that you don't like. So like, I'll cherish that memory forever.
Yeah.
And then we got to talk about like the time that I did like the kid critic thing where right, I sent right, in right. a review to Daily Herald with, or I said Crimson Tide was a movie that should sink to the bottom of the sea and never come back up because I was 12 and I didn't understand Crimson Tide and I wanted to see Gordy the Pig at
right.
Town and Country right. Mall. Crimson Tide's awesome. So, but yeah, that was great. Your panels were terrific.
Thank you.
You completely underestimate how good you are. I think like your nervousness, though, I think it feeds off of the quality of how good they end up. So I think there's a correlation. I think if you weren't as nervous, you wouldn't have, like, gotten there. So
okay.
Maybe you need that nervous energy.
Maybe.
Maybe you should embrace it.
Yeah, I guess so. The Aliens one I was super nervous about.
Yeah.
I thought it went okay.
They weren't, like, real... they're friendly, but,
yes.
like, I didn't think that they didn't do anything like memorable. I think when you go to the panels, you're always expecting like a
right.
moment and
right.
there was no moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Kane Hodder was a little easier.
Yeah.
Cause he just will go off and he's done it so much that he'll just tell a story on his own.
Yeah.
Peter Cowper was really fun because who knows
yes.
anything about Peter Cowper and he turns out to be the nicest Canadian man ever.
That was a total My Bloody Valentine bump. That was the bump for this
was
show
it?
For me.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it made me want to rewatch that movie because I'm just like, Peter Cowper is like the Canadian John Corbett. Like
he is incredibly nice and friendly.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what to expect from him. So as soon as he came up and we met right before the panel and
yeah.
he was super nice and I it helped calm some of my nerves right away because I was like, oh, this guy's a sweetheart and
yeah.
this is going to be fine.
That's good. Yeah. And he talked a lot too. So like
he
kind of
yeah.
knew the gig. Yeah.
Right. And then Shawnee Smith is a weirdo, but
Shawnee Smith,
I got through it.
Yeah. Shawnee Smith had a moment that I really enjoyed where she had two that I thought were really great where, one was she was talking about like her working relationship with Tobin Bell over the three Saw movies.
Yeah.
And she was trying to pull like a whoopee cushion prank on him. And Tobin Bell is such like so dedicated to acting where he was just like, where are you, Shawnee? Where are you? I need you, Shawnee. And it was like because she was goofing off and she
yeah.
wasn't giving him like the back and forth that he needed for John Kramer in Saw 3. And I just thought it was so funny because he's like, where are you, Shawnee? Where's my girl?
I want to play a game.
And you want to play a different game. But the joke is on me. I thought the joke was on everyone else. I just love, like, I always envision, like, what is the day where John Kramer stopped being normal? Where it's just like, he didn't want to go to Blockbuster anymore. He had an idea.
I think it was the day his wife miscarried, isn't it?
Yeah, but
didn't he settle on that in the movie?
I don't know. I feel like there would be days after that where he was still the normal guy where like but one day he was just like, you know what?
Yeah.
just go with it. I saw Adam Sandler. I saw just go with it. And I took that advice to heart. I also really liked when she was... So somebody went up to the mic, a real funny guy, went up to the mic and goes, like, since we're at a horror convention, which seemed to be the opening for, like, a question at every Q&A, which I thought was interesting this year. He's like, since we're at a horror convention, talk about your experience working with Charlie Sheen. And I was just like, when did she work with Charlie Sheen? But apparently it was on that Anger Management show.
Which I never watched.
And she, like, I thought it was cool, even though he's got, like, you know, a reputation, like, she stuck up for her friend.
Right.
And I thought that was, and she did it in a way that didn't embarrass the guy who asked the question.
Right.
But she also said things like, there's a lot of beauty in that horror, which has now become, like, a go-to line that I'll never forget anytime I think about Charlie Sheen. And it beats winning. It beats
she
any
referred
of that
to him
stuff.
As a space traveler.
Space traveler, that he might be the best actor that there ever was. And I kept thinking about the medal ceremony at the end of Terminal Velocity at that point.
Oh, my God. I love Terminal Velocity.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
It's so good.
It is really good. I liked in he did like an interview that like an old interview in like the 90s when Terminal Velocity came out. And it got popped up on like my feed for some reason not too long ago. And it was, I mean, so much of it was just, like, sexist and misogynistic, but, like, one of the things he was saying was he's like, nobody on the set could control Kinski, but me and Kinski saw eye to eye. And I was just like, I need to see a documentary about this.
On what planet is she out of control?
It was just, like, she was a firecracker, and, like, only Chuck Sheen could, you know, see the...
She kept putting whoopee cushions under his butt, and he's like, where are you, Natasha? Where are you?
Totally.
Where are the whores?
Yeah. It's just like, do you think we'll be better than Drop Zone?
No.
And the answer is no, because Drop Zone is a certified classic.
Oh, I like Terminal Velocity better than Drop Zone.
I like both, but I mean, Drop Zone is, it's the best. My favorite purchase of the weekend was I bought the soundtrack to Perfect on vinyl for $10.
Where Whitney Houston is like eighth billed.
She is. There's two songs by Jermaine Jackson on there.
Nice.
Or Jermaine Stewart. Jermaine Stewart. Oh, okay. The We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off guy.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So I'm looking forward to giving that a listen.
Yeah. You need to see Perfect.
How were the Friday Five people that you met and did a panel
with? So that was the con bump for me, even though I already love that movie.
Yeah.
But meeting them and four of the five couldn't have been nicer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really fun. That panel was really fun. Got some good stories out of them, like Carol Locatell, who plays Ethel, you know, I know you love my Stew Jr.
Yeah.
Told a story. Cause I asked, you know, what's it like working with Danny Steinman? He seems like a madman. And Melanie Kinneman didn't want to talk about it. Deborah Voorhees, who plays Tina, the girl who gets naked in the woods, said he was super nice to me, and everybody was like, well, I wonder why. And then Ethel said the only direction she ever got from him was when she dies, she gets stabbed and she falls into a pot, and they cut to a shot of her squeezing a tomato.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it the first time, and he made her redo it because it wasn't sexy enough. So that tells you everything about Danny Steinman.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I met two people from Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah.
I met Grant Kramer, who plays the lead male hero, and I met Suzanne Snyder, who's the female hero of the movie. And Grant Kramer was like, that was the one where when I alluded to it before, where it's just like, you don't expect anything. What am I going to talk to Grant Kramer about other than just saying like, hey, you know, I watched this on HBO so many times when I was six. So that's what I was doing. And then he was signing it and it was just like dead air. And I was just like, you know what? I'm like, I remember, I do have something I could talk to him about. He was talking up Willy's Wonderland when he was doing the Killer Clowns panel. Cause he was a producer on it, and he was talking about working with Nicolas Cage and the decision to forego having one line of dialogue for him because the studio wanted him to have like a badass line to put in the trailers like that. And Nicolas Cage was just like, no, you know, respectfully, I think like he shouldn't talk. Like, I've never done a movie where my character never talks. I think it would be so much cooler if we didn't talk. So I was like, you know, I haven't seen Willy's Wonderland, so like I haven't been spoiled by like the fact that I heard from everybody it's not that great.
I liked it.
Oh, I thought you didn't like it.
No, I liked it.
Oh, you liked it? Yeah. Okay, well, now
I'm inclined to like it.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
it's Nicolas Cage kind of in a horror movie.
I could have sworn that was like the one recent one that you didn't like.
But, no, I enjoyed it. Okay. It's on Hulu if you care to watch it.
All right.
You might hate it.
Yeah, well, you know, I've seen stuff that I've hated as recently as the movies I've talked about on the show. And so I was talking to Grant Kramer about it. I was like, yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it. You know, there's a lot of his movies to catch up on. And I was doing that just to kind of like see if he's seen Pig. So I was like, have you seen Pig?
Yeah.
And he's just like, I haven't yet. And then we talked about Pig for like 5 minutes. And he was like, well, tell me about it. Like, he's like, what's it like? And I'm just like, well, you think from the setup, like it could, if they wanted to, they could have gone the John Wick route.
Right.
But then it's such a sullen inward performance from him, and he sets the tone for the rest of the movie, and you have no idea where it's going. And then like when you get there, you're just like, this movie is kind of like this minor miracle where it's just like a filmmaker and an actor like and a screenwriter got together, and they're just like, let's tell exactly the story we want to tell.
Yeah.
And it's so great to see that. And he was just like, wow, that sounds like really good. And then it was like the best, you know, fan like celebrity interaction I had all weekend.
That's awesome.
So that was good. And then when I met Suzanne Snyder, I was just like, look, lady, I like Killer Clowns, but I want to talk about Fool's Rush In. And then she kind of made a face, and I was just like, oh shit. I'm like, does she not like Fool's Rush In? And like, why doesn't she like Fool's Rush In? And
right. Maybe, and then she had a bad experience on it.
I don't know. And she said that she said the writer and producer of that movie, that it's their story. That the movie's based on their relationship.
Really?
And I did not know that. And then I was talking about how I'm like, you know how much I like Fool's Rush In? I watched it on the TV Guide channel once.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And then she's just like made another face. And I'm like, no, it's a good thing. And then I said, I'm just like, you know what? In that movie, Matthew Perry, he had no bad option. Like, it could have been you, or it could have been Salma Hayek, and it could have been like great either way. And then she kind of made another face, and I'm like, look, I'm not buttering you up, lady. I'm just saying. So it was like super kind of awkward, but like, I don't know. She seemed really nice, but she just, I'm noticing when I meet celebrities between her, Tom Holland at a previous convention, and then Kane Hodder when I met him. If you're not talking about like the stuff they're most known for, sometimes they don't want to talk about the deep cuts for some reason.
Interesting.
And I always thought it would be the opposite.
Right.
I thought
they'd
be excited.
I talk about Killer Clowns all day for 3 days of this weekend.
But she didn't seem to want
to
talk
about
Fool's Rush In. Kane Hodder didn't seem to want to talk about Wishmaster. And yeah, Tom Holland definitely didn't want to talk about Thinner. And I'm just like, ugh,
yeah,
all right, well, I'll stick to the, I'll shut up and play the hits. So, but I bought The Good Son on VHS.
Yes, you did.
It was a joke for $3, and I was going to give it to you as sort of like a security blanket for your panels.
Oh, I appreciate it.
But you had a lot of situational awareness, and like you saw that I was buying it as I was buying it. And I'm just like, well, now the joke's ruined, but I'm already pot committed, and I already had my $3 out. So I will offer it up as this. If we get 200 comments on this podcast, the person who leaves the 200th comment,
okay,
and lives in the Chicagoland area,
okay,
I will meet them in a public place and give them a 10 questionnaire on The Good Son. And if you get 7 out of 10 right, you get a copy of The Good Son on VHS.
Wow, that's a lot of...
20th Century Foxes.
That's a lot of qualifications.
A Joseph Rubin joint.
200 questions.
Macaulay Culkin is Henry.
200 comments. 200th commenter has to live in the Chicagoland area and answer 7 correct questions about The Good Son?
Yeah, I want to be fair, but I also want this never to happen. Because I'm as much as I love our fans, you got to be careful these days.
Sure, yeah.
So that's why public plays. No
200
comments. 200 comments. But, you know, I
mean, we've
given
you a lot to work with. You had all that Space Jam stuff. You had the Lola Bunny debate.
Yeah. This is buried probably in, like, the 60th minute of the episode. Really,
it's minute 59.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, you know.
It was a fun weekend. I feel like had you been able to be there for the Friday Five panel, it would have definitely been your con bump.
Okay.
Because, again, they were really, really nice. And every time I saw most of them all weekend, they were talking to me and thanking me. And they just were really, really cool. Melanie Kinneman was a little...
Yeah.
She was all business.
Okay.
I'll say that.
If anybody who runs Flashback Weekend is listening, please get a mini poster guy next year.
Yeah, what the heck?
I would have gotten so many more autographs. I would have gotten D.B. Sweeney's autograph, but the...
On a Spawn poster.
The 27-by-40-inch Spawn poster was $100.
No, can't do it.
Although, I
heard
did,
he lives in Chicago, though.
He does live in Chicago.
I had no idea.
He is the best. That's why it's DB the best. He's my favorite Allosaurus ever from 2000's Dinosaur.
I forgot that was him.
You can't find a dinosaur poster to save your life on the internet, I'll tell you that much.
Wow.
I also met Sean Clark and Chris Nelson from the Thing with Two Heads YouTube podcast show. That's a show I really liked a lot when I was in quarantine last year. They started it then and they've kept it going. It's a really good show if you like behind the scenes convention stuff.
Okay.
Like, so that's why I like it the most. And then also Chris Nelson, he was the groom at the beginning of Kill Bill Volume 2.
Oh, that's right.
He does a lot of horror makeup effects. He won an Oscar for Suicide Squad for doing the gator guy or whatever.
Okay.
But he did the makeup effects on Kill Bill Volume 1 and everything, and they signed for free, and that was really nice of them.
Yeah.
Although, it went from... This is sometimes why... I sent out a tweet over the weekend where I said, I have no idea what I'm saying to celebrities when I talk to them. There should be a class on this. Like, they should teach you, like, what to talk about. Because... Sometimes I go there, I talk to Sean Clark, tell him I like the show a lot. They're really good interviewers. I mentioned that to him. He's like, oh, thanks. And he signs the autograph. I go up to Chris Nelson. I start saying the same thing, signs the autograph. Then I said, hey, buddy, I got an idea. And then I said, you know what they should do? I'm like, you know how Tarantino said he's got one movie left in him and it should be like more of an epilogue than like a full epic, that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood should be his full epic. And then as I was going on, I could just see like the blood drain from his face, where I was just like, oh God, this bit is not working, but I'm already in it. I got to finish it up. And then I was like, they should do, the last movie should just be you and Uma Thurman at the record store. And then it's just you talking about like Tarantino pop culture stuff and music. Like, that would be really cool. And he's just like, all right, cool, thanks, yeah. And then I was just like, oh, no, this wasn't, it was just like a joke. It wasn't like a real pitch. And then he, like, started, he gave me a fist bump at the beginning, and then he gave me a high five at the end. And I'm like, oh, no, that's like getting a pat on the head. Like, I feel like he thinks I'm a complete idiot. So never pitch ideas to anyone, ever.
All right, anything else about Flashback, or should we get into A Nightmare on Elm Street 5?
No, let's get into it.
All right. The Dream Child comes out in 1989, the lowest grossing Nightmare on Elm Street movie at that point.
Probably all of them, I would think.
You think Freddy's Dead made more?
Yeah, I'm sure Freddy's Dead, at least just from opening weekend, made more. Like, that propelled it to making more.
Yeah.
And I think New Nightmare probably made more, too.
I'm checking it out right now.
And Freddy's vs. Jason was a hit. So that definitely made more.
It doesn't say here. It says it was the highest grossing. Oh, it's the second lowest grossing Nightmare on Elm Street film.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't say what the lowest grossing is. It made $22 million.
Hmm. Maybe it was New Nightmare. I remember New Nightmare opened the same day as Pulp Fiction. Bad luck for New Nightmare.
Yeah. Okay, Freddy's Dead made about $35 million.
Yeah. 3D bump, baby.
It's gotta be New Nightmare.
Yeah.
$19 million.
No.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, because it's really good.
Yep.
It's
the lowest grossing, huh?
Lowest grossing. So the first time I ever saw this movie was at a church lock-in that I went to with my friend.
Is it because of, was it like an immersive Amanda Kruger experience?
It wasn't. It was just because, this was a new horror movie that had just come out on VHS. Ah. And so it was they rented it and showed it at the church lock-in. I'm probably not knowing about all of the...
it wasn't just a hip employee of the church?
I don't think so.
How could they not know that it wasn't appropriate for a church lock-in?
I don't know.
That's amazing.
I don't know. That buzzing is back. So sorry, guys, if you hear the buzzing, but we're just going to talk through it.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is your favorite of the sequels.
So if you hooked me up to... So it's definitely my favorite of the sequels.
Okay, that's what I thought.
If you hooked me up to a lie detector machine, it's my favorite of the Elm Street movies.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I have such a soft spot for this movie. It was actually the last Elm Street movie I ever saw for the first time. Because I started with the series with Freddy's Dead, and then saw New Nightmare, and then went back and saw 4... 1, 3, 2, then 5. Because I heard 5 was so bad,
right,
that I put it off for a really, really long time. And I didn't see it for the first time until maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
Or maybe less even. And on this rewatch, I don't... So the best watch I ever had of it was 2 years ago or so, maybe 3 years ago. Me and Eric wrote a column about Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5
okay.
for the site. And I said, this is the Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 of the Elm Street series because it's the Alice saga, the whole bloody affair for Alice. And I think 4 and 5 could combine to be an amazing single movie. I think there's great stuff in both of them.
Okay.
More so, I think the actual structure and meat of the movie and the heart of the movie is better in 5. But certain things, there's that movie theater sequence in 4 that I think is really great.
When they're in the time loop?
Yeah, where she... Well, there's the time loop, and then there's also one where she, goes into, an old theater, and then she gets, blown by a wind machine,
into
the
remember.
Movie.
4 is the one I think I've seen the least.
Okay, yeah. I've seen maybe that one the most for some reason.
Oh, no kidding.
Because it was the one I would sneak for a few minutes to watch on cable. So I didn't see, the whole thing.
Right.
But, 7-year-old me was just I want to watch, 3 minutes of Freddy and scare myself and then turn it off. It also has, I think, a much better ending than 5. Because in 4, it's Freddy's, all the souls are,
Right.
It's the performance artists are, pushing out of him and stuff, and it's just this gnarly makeup effect, and it's great. And Linnea Quigley apparently was one of the
women in there.
And stuff like that. But the thing that I love about, and I guess my thesis sort of for why I love 5 so much is... As a Freddy movie, is it all that good? No, I don't think it is. As an Alice movie, I think it's amazing.
Okay.
I think it's got such heart, and it cares about its characters in the same way that, Halloween 4 cares about its characters.
Okay.
Where, Freddy or Michael Myers, in the case of Halloween 4, it's just a bonus. It's just this great thing. I'm so invested in, the teen drama of it all that, all the other stuff is just, the cherry on top of the sundae for me.
Okay.
And even though it's not, high art, so to speak, I just think that between, Lisa Wilcox and Danny Hassel and Kelly Jo Minter and Stephen Hopkins' direction of them and the script and everything, and, especially Lisa Wilcox's relationship with her dad, there's a full arc so weirdly sincere for, a slasher series.
Mm-hmm.
And, spoilers for Nightmare 5, where they end up, it's, she made it. Alice lives.
Right.
She's the only person. They don't fuck her over like they did with Nancy.
Right.
She never comes back in another movie where she's killed off and everything. She gets to live off in happiness with her dad and her baby and her friend. And it just warms my heart. And I love that. I mean, there's a fucking line in this movie that almost makes me cry. where she's pregnant and she asks her dad, she's like, "Are you disappointed in me?"
Yeah.
And he says, "No, it would be really nice to have another little boy running around in the house." And I'm even getting choked up just thinking about it. Because it's so sweet. And it's No, that her brother's death in 4 mattered.
Right. Like, I don't think I'd ever noticed that line before today.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's acknowledging what's-his-name, Dramarama, getting killed in 4.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm always going to, you know, like you have famously attested to, like, being the champion of, like, the ambitious failure and yeah. stuff like that. Yeah. For me, like, I'm that champion for movies that shouldn't have heart that have heart.
Okay.
Like, I'm a sucker for it. I'll praise it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, the movie famously was super rushed.
Yeah.
Stephen Hopkins was hired in February to direct it, and it had a release date in August.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't even comprehend that turnaround when you think about yeah. a movie that has as many practical effects
mm-hmm.
as this movie has. And for me, beyond just the Lisa Wilcox of it all, it's Stephen Hopkins that kind of makes it.
Yeah.
Because he has such imagination and there's all kinds of weird, fucked up visuals. His goal was to try to make Freddy scary again. And I think everybody says that. I think everybody who is hired to direct a Nightmare on Elm Street movie is like, well, I'm going to make it scary again because it hasn't been scary in a while. And I don't think he does that. I think, unfortunately, you have these two things fighting with each other a little bit where it's like the expectation of Freddy to be the one-liner Freddy.
Yeah.
Pulling in the opposite direction of what Stephen Hopkins wants to do. Because if you think about it, they can never even decide on a one-liner for Freddy. So he just does 7 of them. It's like right. trying out new material. Like mm-hmm. as he's feeding Greta and killing her.
Yeah. The Bon Appetit, bitch.
Bon Appetit, bitch. And I don't remember the other ones. There's like 4 other ones that he's just rattling off as he's feeding
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
Bon Appetit, bitch, fine, if you need to get that in there. But I just think, like, if he talked way less in this movie, he would be so much scarier.
Yeah.
If they would have just pulled back on the dialogue, I think they could have achieved the goal of making Freddy scary. Not when he's super Freddy, you know, that's never going to be scary. It's just silly. Yeah. And this movie, unfortunately, 3 kind of codifies the thing where it's like, this character is into this, so they're going to die, like, this way. Like, yep. this character is a former drug addict, so she's going to die by getting all these little mouths or eyes that pop out on her arm. And
oh,
then
Jennifer
Freddy's
going to
stab
yeah.
her, right, with needles
yeah.
for fingers. And this guy's a wizard, so he's going to die a wizard's death. Whatever. and so,
I've never heard it put that way. It's so funny.
Dying a wizard's
yeah,
death.
Yeah.
So this movie, unfortunately,
he needs to do the Gandalf line where he's like, run, you fools.
This movie, you know, unfortunately continues with that by having Greta be like this wannabe model and having this eating disorder. So her yeah. death is tied into that. And comic book guy dies the comic book guy death. And
yeah.
It is a little weird every time I watch 5. It's like Alice has all these friends and they're like, we're a gang. We've always been friends. And it's like, no, you weren't. You yeah. guys didn't exist in the last movie when yeah. all her friends were killed off. Where did you guys come from and when did you get so close?
I don't know why I never thought of that before, but it's blowing my mind now. Because also, too, like, what group of friends is like, sitting around constantly like being like, and we're friends, mm-hmm. you know, and they kind of are like doing
right.
that.
Yeah. yeah.
So, I don't know, good times.
but I really like a lot of the visuals. I love the M.C. Escher climax.
Yeah.
I like the visual of, I mean, I don't like Alice in the Freddy makeup, but then when mm-hmm. she's pulling apart and yeah. splitting into Freddy, I think that's such a weird, like, Dolly-esque, mm-hmm. fucked up visual.
Yeah.
The stuff with Greta being force-fed is very disturbing, you know, yeah. and apparently was way more disturbing. We already talked about how the fact that we both watched this segment in Never Sleep Again, which only made me want to watch all of Never Sleep Again.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But Never Sleep Again touches upon that this movie, of all of them, was the most kind of gutted.
Yeah.
It could have been so much darker, and I feel like if it was, it would be higher in everybody's estimation.
I think so, too. I mean, like, I'm this movie's biggest defender, really, yeah. but, like, I'm not blind to the fact that it doesn't really cohesively work in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And, yeah, it definitely feels rushed and truncated, like even in the edit where it's just like, you know, even if it's just not editing for the MPAA, it's just like everything kind of feels accelerated in a way that, you know, plenty of horror movies are 90 minutes, but this one feels a bit rushed and in certain scenes. And I think the third act like really kind of loses its way in a lot of ways, but is sort of salvaged a bit by the heart and then also by just the amazing practical effects, which like we took for granted. Like, I mean,
yeah, isn't that crazy that like this movie came out and we were like, psh, whatever, that movie's not good.
Cause it's just like, passe, look at what they're doing. It's like enough of this, you know, like every movie has goop in it and stuff like
right,
that.
Exactly.
But like now it's just like all you want is that again. So, but yeah, I mean, that's one thing that's nice about going back to like these 80s, 90s horror movies is just like, this is the peak of these guys, you know, at the top of their game, like working with the budgets that they need and working with the time that they need and everything like that to really kind of just go crazy.
It's a bummer that the movie isn't recognized for the things that it does well and is only looked at as sort of a failure of story. And like you, I recognize that there are problems with the story and some of this stuff about like Freddy being reborn through Alice by capturing the souls of her friends. It's like, I don't totally understand what the rules are, what the objective is. I know Freddy's back, you know, and like, and I know she's pregnant and has a kid and
there's baby Freddy, but like
baby Freddy is
baby.
Interesting. Right.
Which by the way, I mean, and how, like if you're the progeny of Danny Hassel and Lisa Wilcox, like that should be the best looking person ever. Like, and I'm not like disparaging the actor who played their child, but I mean, just like maybe I'm disparaging the casting director. It's just like, you need to find like the hunk of all babies. Like, like that's some good breeding right there. Like, I just can't, like, I don't know. And yeah, it's one thing I also think, kind of segueing to like Lisa Wilcox in this movie, is Eric brought up like this great point when I was rereading the article that he and I wrote, where he says from 4 to 5, like I always was like, I don't know, I feel like she found the character like in 5. Like in 4, she was seemed more green as an actor, and like in 5, she definitely feels like she's got ownership of the character and like, you know, she's spanning over 2 movies and she's the lead. So it's like she's got that confidence in her and everything like that. And that characterization, she knows who this person is. But Eric said something where it's like almost like in 4, she's Carrie White. She's like that meager, like meek person.
Yeah.
And then by 5, she's who did he say she was? She's like Laurie Strode. And I'm just like, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like it's nice because that's why I think like 4 and 5 work together, is because there's these little like mini arcs that are happening with certain characters and everything like that, and certain storylines. And
well, in 4, she's not meant to be the hero.
No,
right? It's supposed to be Kristen, and then it's like, oh, Kristen gets killed off halfway through the movie, and now Alice has to step up and be the final girl.
Yeah,
which is super interesting and rarely done in a slasher movie.
Yeah, con story related to Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. So more 4. So I was at Monster Mania and I met, so the whole reason why we're doing Nightmare on Elm Street 5 for this one is because it ties into Flashback, and this was like the original Hopkins bump, Con bump,
yeah.
And
Hopkins bump happened after Judgment Night, right?
I think it was before.
Was it?
I think, or maybe the Judgment Night screening.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But this was Con bump because it was just like, you saw a panel where it was like Lisa Wilcox, Danny Hassel, Kelly Jo Minter, and stuff like that. It's like, these are the nicest people. Like,
yes.
And they just seem like great people and everything. And like, dream convention guests. And then it's just like, is 5 good? Is 5 awesome? It's just like, you're like going over it in your head. And then like, So I didn't meet Lisa Wilcox at Flashback that year. So she was at a Monster Mania that Rob and I went to. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to meet her this time. I had the poster problem. I'm looking everywhere for like a Nightmare 5 poster I couldn't find one. So I found Nightmare 4 and I'm just like, fine, I'll get it. So I get it. I bring up to her. I talk about like, you know, how much I love her in the movie and everything like that, and how much I love the movie. And right at her table next to her, and it's a great experience, she's very nice, I've met her a couple times because I bought like an Alice Lives shirt from her at a different time, and then she was trying to sell me on like her like escape rooms in LA. And I'm
oh
like,
yes, I remember this.
I'm like, I live in Chicago. What do you want me to do with this?
Was this at a flashback?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it was really.
I remember the whole escape room thing.
Because she, yeah, apparently this was pre-pandemic. Like her and Heather Langenkamp, I think like a few other people, maybe it was Amanda Wiss too, like had these escape rooms like in LA where like you would be in the room with like somebody from horror movies. And
right.
She was talking to me about it because I think I had made a passing mention or I was wearing an F This Movie shirt or something like that. She's like, what is that? And I explained it to her, you know, the show. And she kind of, I think, thought like, we could maybe promote it, which right, I guess right. years later we're doing that right now. So you're welcome.
You're welcome, Lisa Wilcox.
But I remember being so nervous and uncomfortable in that regard. Yeah, yeah, luckily, you were standing behind me. I'm like, it's his site. It's his site. Go talk to Patrick. I'm like, click contact us. So, all right, sorry, I'm jumping around a lot. But at Monster Mania, I met Lisa Wilcox for the first time, got her autograph and everything like that. And then at the table right next to her was Tuesday Night.
Uh-oh.
And
was she singing her song?
She wasn't singing her song, but I have been to a con where she sings her song.
I know.
At the Q&A.
Yeah, she did it at Flashback.
She did it at Flashback. It was outside. There was key lighting on everybody. They looked beautiful. It was crazy. I was just like, has there ever been a cast that looks better than this? The answer is no. And then Tuesday Night's like just sitting there, just ready. She sees I have the Nightmare 4 poster. Yeah. She's just sitting there, just ready. Just ready to talk. Ready to sign an autograph, ready to get a quick $30 or $40 or whatever it was. And then I get it. I get the thing back from Lisa Wilcox. I'm like, thanks. And then I kind of was like, eh, and like kind of waved at Tuesday Night. And she like waves back at me. Yeah. And I was just like, gotta go.
Oh, no,
and I was just
denied.
Like, and I, in hindsight, I was like, oh, I should have gone back there. But like, you know what? That would have been a guilt one.
Sure.
And I don't want a guilt autograph.
Sure.
Guilt graph.
Is she going to be at Monster Mania this year?
No. No, not. I don't think anybody from Nightmare is going to be.
Why the hell not? There should always be somebody from Nightmare.
There really should. There really, really should. You know who else lives in this movie?
Little KJM.
A little firecracker named Kelly Jo Minter. Oh, man.
Yeah, this movie breaks the mold. Not only does it not kill its one black character, but it manages to not kill one of the friends at all and lets her live to the end.
Yeah, and I love in the Never Sleep Again documentary where she's just, like, talking about that fact. And then also how she's like, I really liked in the script that my character was just, like, calling her on her shit.
Yeah,
just
right,
like,
right,
it's
right.
Just like, yeah, that's totally what would happen because like what she's saying is nuts,
right?
And apparently she wasn't around for the friends in four to know that this is for real.
She wasn't.
Yeah,
but they've always been friends.
She was like, I was at the pool, I was diving off the board, and then there was a Beetlejuice claw, and I was like, oh my god! And then I jumped through the water, and then I went into a puddle. I was like, how'd I get in this puddle? But I was really just in a hot tub, but I was under the water in the hot tub. And I was like, Jack Napier and Batman. And I was like, man, my face is hot. And then I get out, but I'm not the Joker. I'm just Kelly Jo.
And Kelly Jo, what was it like filming that?
Why do you want to know that? And then I did this movie called The People Under the Stairs. And I was the older sister of this guy named Fool. And I was like, Fool, you better not be messing around at that house. And then Fool was like, but they got these gold coins. And I'm like, are you with Ving Rhames again? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, he knows where the meat is because he does the thing for hobbies now.
She's in summer school, too, with Shawnee.
She is. Should have asked her about that.
I should have. What was it like to work with Kelly Jo Minter?
Yeah. I wanted to ask Shawnee Smith, it's like, what's it like to work with Mark Harmon? Hold on, I'll get my dad on the phone and put it on speaker.
He needs to know.
He needs to know.
He's dying to find out.
Yeah, yeah.
I think for me, the bump for this movie came after Never Sleep Again.
I could
hear that,
hearing
what Stephen Hopkins was up against, I was like, well, I need to revisit this. And I watched it, and I was like, boy, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's really creative and beautiful and interesting. And I agree that it doesn't necessarily work on a story level, but, like, it's so much better than it gets credit for being.
Yeah. No, I mean, you had mentioned the M.C. Escher thing, which is, you know, they did that in Labyrinth and everything like that, too. But, I mean, it makes so much sense for the Elm Street mythology So it's great to see. And, like, just fucking, like, I mean, like, the art direction and, yeah. like, the lighting effects yeah. and everything yeah. like that. It's just wonderful. That's one of the reasons why I'd mentioned it before, but I went to, like, that Eli Roth haunted house in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There's this one room where, like, there's, you walk through, it's like this horror maze haunted house thing. And, like, you walk through and you're in this room and it's a wedding chapel. And I was like, oh my God, this looks like I'm in a fucking scene from Nightmare on Elm Street, Find the Dream Child. Nice. And it was like, I didn't want to leave. I was like mesmerized. And then like the end of it, you're just like pushing your way through these trash bags. And it looks like you're like escaping from like the arms of terror. And then you get spat out and you're just in the middle of the gift shop. And people are looking at you like, what the fuck happened to you? And I'm just like, you know what? That is kind of cool. It's like you're Marilyn Burns at the end of Texas Chainsaw. Yeah. Where it's just like, what the fuck happened to you? We're just people buying shirts and look at your ass. All red on the face.
Guy driving the pickup at the end of Texas Chainsaw where he like sees the leather faces chasing. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great moment. Yeah, but yeah, Stephen Hopkins, I mean, he's just such like a, he was just the perfect guy to do a movie like this at this time. And
and he brought so much of himself to it. All the comic book stuff is him. The MC Escher stuff is him. You know, he was really contributing to a lot of the screenplay. I'm not familiar with the guy who wrote the screenplay, but like John Skip, I'm totally familiar with, and David Scow, I'm totally familiar with.
Yeah, they wrote the story, and I guess the script was credited to Leslie Boehm.
Yeah.
And he wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 5, Nowhere to Run, Daylight, and Dante's Peak.
Oh, that's right. You talked about how he wrote these other, like, disaster movies, and Nowhere to Run is a favorite of ours.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
Yeah.
It was pretty great.
That's a good Van Damme right there.
Yeah. They need to do, you know what they need to do? Because I always am, like, a champion of the Southern action movie.
Yeah.
Like the going country action movie.
Right.
They needed to do a going country Freddy movie.
Going country.
Yeah. Where he's just like goes to like a general store and he's just like, here to pick up some supplies. Got any jerky? He's just like, I don't think I'll fit that in my pickup.
How much for a bag of ice? No, the big one. Where's Josh Lucas? Is this a Lowe's or not? I want to get more done. I've got to build all these dream sets. Oh, no, Freddy. He has to buy so much lumber for the dream sets.
Yeah. Oh, man. I always wonder, you and I had this conversation at lunch at the convention where it's like, man, I feel like I'm living the same year over and over again. Do you think Freddy ever feels that way? Where he's
must,
just like,
right?
Like, what is he doing the
he's
downtime?
He's constantly being killed.
What is
Does he
doing?
Does he react to that when he comes back? Is he ever just like, man, that sucked?
Yeah.
What a waste of time. Yeah, right? what do you think of his death in this, where the kid just, like, vomits out a tendril and then it blows through him with the faces of the souls of the friends?
It's bad, but it's not any worse than Freddy's Dead, where he just gets three sticks of dynamite in him and blows up and then goes,
Well, I think it's interesting that the faces of the friends are so identifiable because of the way that they stylize them when they die. So, like, Danny Hassel goes out as that weird skull cyberpunk motorcycle guy.
We gotta talk about that.
And Greta goes out with her big cheeks, engorged cheeks.
Yeah.
And comic book guy goes out as Captain Enforcer or whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah, I forgot what his name is. Captain Obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Danny Hassel death scene is rough. I was watching this on maybe Thursday night or something. I watched it for like the first 25 minutes. That's right at where Danny Hassel's death scene is. And I stopped the movie
because
I was just like, I can't watch this. Like, I like this guy too much.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts my feelings. It's like if you saw like Keanu Reeves violently die, like in a movie. Like, I'll get through it, but I'm not going to get through it right now. I'm going to watch baseball or something like that. So I went back to it, and as I was watching it, you know, and of course, like in the Never Sleep Again documentary, they show how much more makeup effects and violence.
It was supposed to be
like
a lot more graphic.
But I was watching it, I was just like, holy shit, he goes in that moment from, where is it? He goes from like, it's like Hellraiser death more than a Nightmare on Elm Street death. Yeah. And then he like kind of turns into Spawn, but then he ends up as Dr. Satan.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I want to get back to, you were talking about like the ending where the baby's spitting out like little Freddies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
One thing, and I think it's just, it's the movie's fault, but like I have no idea what happens to Amanda Kruger at the end of this movie. Like, it seems like she's
like left to fight with Freddy for eternity, right?
Was that it?
I don't know.
It felt like
it does seem like weirdly
mean-spirited.
Mean to Amanda Kruger, whose greatest crime was being raped by a bunch of people,
100 maniacs or whatever,
including Robert Englund.
Yeah.
Making his first non-makeup appearance?
No, couldn't have been.
I don't know.
Or no, he...
He's in six, I know, but...
He's in four... I conflate four and five so much that I have trouble with it, but I feel like he played, like, a nurse. Like, he was dressed in drag, like, in one of them, and I think that was four.
Okay, maybe.
I don't know.
I said, I've seen four the least.
Yeah. I don't know.
Four is, like, one of my least favorite. It's not even bad. It just feels like a repeat of three to me.
A little bit, yeah.
So it's the one I go to the least.
It
feels
like
five has its own personality, and I don't feel like four totally does.
And four almost feels like 50%.
I love Rennie Harlan.
Yes, yes. What's not to love?
Yeah, right.
He's the finisher. I don't know.
he's the finisher.
So four is like this weird movie where it's like it's half part three, 1.5, and half like a prequel to five.
Right.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, we talked about the Danny Hassel death sequence. The other like centerpiece ones are you got the Greta one, which we kind of talked about already.
Yeah.
You got the pool scene, which isn't a death sequence, but it's kind of an elaborate like,
got some stop motion effects.
Stop motion effects.
Yeah.
And then I guess the one that's talked about the most is the comic book scene. Not great.
Not great.
Yeah.
Is it better than what's his name? You know, Alice's brother fighting Sheets in four? Like, it is better. Because
it's got, like,
at least you get the black and white.
Yeah.
You know, they built a black and white set. They fixed the makeup so that it would pop. Like, there's some creative stuff. It's just, as horror fans, we want to see certain things, and instead it just slashes out a paper cutout and has him go, no!
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's lame. It's Super Freddy is lame.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No. Yeah. I mean, I thought they were going to nail it with Super Shredder and Turtles 2, learning all the lessons from Super Freddy.
Sadly, that did not happen. By the way, that movie's celebrating a 30-year anniversary.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Kino, Ernie Reyes Jr., in a performance he should have gotten nominated for. At least it should have been in the discussion.
Paige Turco
replacing Judith Hoag.
Yeah.
Paige
Turco was Joe Dante's original choice for the Christy Swanson part in The Phantom.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was going to direct The Phantom.
I like Paige Turco.
Sure.
Can't
name much else she's done. I mean, she was on a soap opera that Erica watched and my mom watched. That was why I knew who Paige Turco was.
Gotcha.
I think she was on All My Children. But
yeah. I feel like she couldn't have pulled off the farmhouse sex heat that Judith Hoag had with Elias Koteas. Like, that was just palpable.
Sure.
It was like, did I walk into a Red Shoe Diaries?
Then she marries Will Patton in Armageddon. Is that trading up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, it's like the line in not Young Adult. Or is it Young Adult? No, it's not Young Adult. Well, Tully. It was the line in Tully where Charlize Theron says that Will Patton's the bench, but like when she was on the carousel riding all the different horses, that was the Elias Koteas days.
Right, got it.
And then she had to have sex with him in a crashed car, and she's like, no bueno. we need a Koteas at a con. Come on.
I'm surprised he hasn't done one yet. Maybe he has, but...
Yeah, come on, Wizard World, get on it.
I looked around at a few other cons. It seems like it's all the same guests at all the same cons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
We need some fresh blood.
They still haven't really announced, like, Son of Monster Palooza, right?
No. I think they announced, like, one or two people, and it was, like, Elvira, who's at, you know, a show every year. So. Okay.
L.A., I just feel like, would get the best guests because everybody lives there.
It was exciting when I was there that one year. I went, I saw, I met Radha Mitchell, who doesn't do shows in the Midwest.
Right.
Tammy Lauren, I've never seen do shows in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Alex Esso was there, and she was never at her table, and I was super bummed because I wanted
bummer.
To meet Alex Esso.
Yeah. The other two guests are Nick Castle and Tobin Bell, so.
Yeah.
Where's Shawnee? Where are you?
Where are you?
Where are you, Shawnee?
Shawnee, I can't sign without you. Shawnee. So, I had I mentioned like the Danny Hassel death scene a couple times. There's one thing in this movie that disturbs me more than that.
More than the Danny Hassel death?
More than the Danny Hassel death.
Okay.
At the 54-minute mark.
Yeah.
We pan Alice's bedroom.
Okay.
There are framed 8x10 photos of Danny Hassel as Dan.
Right.
Which is weird to have a 8x10 of your boyfriend.
All right.
And James Dean.
Okay. She likes a bad boy.
They pan to the middle of the room. There are, it's like almost like a mannequin setup.
Okay.
Where it's pants and sneakers on the bottom, but the top half is a potted plant.
Okay.
And it looks like the Midsommar version of the dad from Onward. And it's like, this woman's
interesting.
Nuts.
Interesting, okay.
And Kelly Jo Minter's like, what the fuck is that? You some kind of crazy plant bitch? What the fuck?
Kelly Jo, do you have a problem with plants?
I don't like them. I don't want to be around them. I saw the ruins, and I was like, fuck that.
I still haven't seen the ruins.
The ruins is good.
That's what I hear.
The ruins is really messed up. The ruins is what old should have been.
I think I own the ruins. So I should watch it.
Yeah.
Maybe this October.
Yeah.
I'll put it on my list.
I would recommend it. I'll watch The Empty Man, everyone. Film Twitter, I'll watch The Empty Man,
okay.
I promise.
If this gets 200 comments.
If this gets 200 comments.
And you answer 7 questions correct about The Good Son.
Yes.
Adam will watch The Empty Man.
I will. I certainly will.
Did Flashback do the thing that it usually does, where it like starts to get you ready for Scary Movie Month?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm like way into horror right now.
Okay.
I went to Target on my way over here to see if they had the Monster Bash cereal, and I did not see it.
What the F, Target?
But I saw, like, Dinosaur Dracula, that guy on Twitter, like, post, like, that it was out on shelves, and I was all excited. But they're doing all the Monster cereals together in one box, and it's Monster Bash.
I'll try it.
And I think they also have, like, fruit snacks that are monsters.
I'll try those.
I know. I mean, come on.
I'll try it all.
Let's do this.
You know what we forgot to talk about at Flashback was the costume contest.
Oh, I didn't see it.
It's only worth talking about because one of the runners-up, you saw the couple as the Saw.
Yep.
They
sat next to me at the Killer Clowns.
Okay, they took second.
Okay.
First was this guy in an amazing Creature from the Black Lagoon costume. He's from Schaumburg, actually, and he built it himself, and it's unbelievably detailed and so good-looking.
Yep.
But the third runner-up was a guy dressed in a leather vest with no shirt underneath.
I saw a picture of this.
And jeans. And an E.T. head.
Yeah.
And he was Stone Cold E.T. And he had a whole shtick. He took the mic from Svengoolie and did a whole Stone Cold routine. But it was Stone Cold E.T. the whole time.
So, like, was he talking as Stone Cold?
Yeah.
Or was he, like, throwing in E.T. stuff?
No, mostly just talking as Stone Cold.
That's amazing.
I mean, he went on and on. And, like, placed as well as he did specifically because like the shtick was so funny, not because the costume was so funny.
Got it.
But at one point when they were in line off to the side, a guy dressed as Michael Myers just began stabbing him and he totally went with it, and it was this, the whole audience like stood up and watched Michael Myers murder Stone Cold
E.T.
Oh, no. It got kind of rowdy at the costume contest.
Yeah, there wasn't much rowdiness at any point when
I was
there.
No, there was no 31 panel this year.
No, nothing like that. I don't know. Maybe you're a calming presence where, like, Heather brings out the dead.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm McDowell is the one who kind of shanghaied that panel.
Malcolm McDowell was the Fred Durst of the panel.
He was.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, God, I remember where that one guy was just like, this question's for Malcolm. Talk about the rape scene from Clockwork Orange. And Malcolm's
oh,
just
boy.
Like, what? I would
yeah.
not talk about that.
I thankfully didn't have any really bad audience questions.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that that happened.
Because I caught the end of the meatloaf panel, and I saw a guy who was like, I missed your photo. I missed our photo op. Like, we showed up late, and I missed the photo op that we paid for. Can we get a photo with you?
Yeah.
And Meatloaf's response was like, I'm going back to my table. So
it's like, that's the place you do stuff like
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Oh, boy. So I wrote down, maybe as a finisher, unless you have more that you wanted to talk
no.
about. With
a finisher like Rennie Harlan? A
finisher, yeah. The finisher. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Rennie on here. Which, by the way, it's not talked about enough. There should be a whole book or documentary about the fact that there was a couple swap between Rennie Harlan, Gina Davis, Jeff Goldblum, and Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Like, how is that not a movie unto itself?
That's a fool's rush in situation where you're lucky yeah. to be with either person.
Yeah, I mean, like, fuck, if I spun the bottle and I landed on Rennie Harlan, I wouldn't even complain. So, all right, the question is, Nightmare on Elm Street 5, better or worse than these
oh,
other 1989
I love this
horror
game.
Movies?
Thank you for okay. preparing this.
Okay, is Nightmare on Elm Street 5 better or worse than 976 Evil?
It is better.
Deep Star 6.
It is better.
I haven't seen that one. Leviathan.
It might be worse, but I'd probably watch it first.
Okay. Dead Calm.
Worse.
Halloween 5.
Better. I wish I loved Halloween 5 because of my love for much maligned part 5s like Friday 5 and Nightmare 5.
Yeah.
Halloween 5 would really complete the trilogy, but I do not love part 5.
Well, they kill Ellie Cornell.
Yes.
Like, that's sacrilege. Yeah. That's somebody I would... That we also were talking about who would be our dream con guest.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to think of mine, so...
What, this wouldn't be, like, in my top 3, but I think number 4 would be Ellie Cornell.
Okay.
Like, I want to... And that's one that I think is possible, because they...
She's got to do shows.
I think she does shows. Yeah. Yeah.
Who would be... I have a Halloween 4 poster.
Oh?
Not signed by Danielle Harris. I got her
to
sign my
to...
Hatchet 2 poster.
Oh, okay. Because she's going to be at Monster Mania. I could get it signed for you if you wanted.
Perhaps. All I have right now, it's only signed by... Oh, my gosh. Kathleen Kinmont and Tom Morga.
I want to meet the dude from Dazed and Confused, who's also in Halloween
Sasha
4.
Jensen?
Thank you.
His eyebrows?
Yeah. Yeah. I was on... dorking out talking about Dazed and Confused, and Margo and Sonia and I were talking about how Sasha Jensen should have been like the 90s answer to Sean William Scott.
Yeah,
like where was that
he's
career?
In Buffy also, isn't he?
He is. Yeah.
Wait, so who are your other three con guests?
Number 3 would be M. Night Shyamalan.
Okay.
Number 2 would be
would you say like, what's your name and occupation?
Now I would, yeah. Number
Thomas Jane
two would
does
be Thomas
shows,
Jane.
Doesn't he?
I've never seen him do
for real.
Show.
I thought
no.
he did. Okay.
I feel like apparently
he's
barefoot all the time. Like he refuses to wear shoes at anywhere.
Maybe that's the issue.
It's not an issue for me.
Health risk,
I guess. Yeah. And then number one, who I don't think will do a show, especially now because he like sued The Walking Dead and now got like $200 million.
Right.
It's Frank Darabont.
Darabont.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would love to meet Frank Darabont.
Yeah, he seems like he would be a cool guy.
I'd be super torn about which poster to get signed with him.
Gotta be Majestic, right?
No, probably no? Shosh. I would get multiple posters. If it was a Tom Jane show,
okay.
I would get The Mist.
Okay.
But if it was Laurie Holden was there, I would get The Majestic. But I don't know. That's one where, like, I feel like you don't get fucking cute. You just buy the Shawshank poster, get
okay.
him to sign it,
all
frame
right.
it. You're set and done.
All right. Well, you didn't get Mark Ralston to sign Shawshank.
Yeah, but like, if I think my best bet for another Shawshank person
yeah.
is Sadler, who I already met.
Okay.
Or Clancy Brown, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like you. You got to get a headliner on there somewhere.
Right.
And when am I ever going to get a headliner from Shawshank?
Right.
Never.
That's true.
So, yeah.
That's why you got to go Majestic.
I love the Majestic.
I know you do.
Yeah. Okay, Nightmare on Elm Street 5 or Stepfather 2?
I haven't seen that in so long that I probably don't want to answer that.
Nightmare on Elm Street 5 or Parents?
Again, I like Elm Street 5 better, but I know a lot of people would say Parents.
Okay, Pet Sematary.
Pet Sematary.
I think that's the only one I would put over Nightmare 5 at this point. Toxic Avenger 2 or 3?
Nightmare 5.
Okay. Paper House.
This is sacrilege, but Nightmare 5.
Phantom of the Opera 1989.
Dwight H. Little, you my boy.
Jill Sholin.
Jill
Bob Sholin.
Bob
England.
Molly Shannon. Oof. Nightmare 5.
The Fly 2.
Just watched it
last
week.
The Fly 2?
Just rewatched it, yeah.
I'm not a fan of that one.
Nah, it's not great, but it's got Zunigs.
Oh, she's a doll.
Yes.
She does cons.
Does she?
She's at Texas Frightmare for $30.
Wow.
Which, by the way, if you ever want to know, like, it's not like a pass-fail, but, like, if you ever see somebody charging $30 at a convention, they're a mensch. They're a great person. Like,
that's all the Friday Five cast, by the way.
Jeff Daniel Phillips, $30 at Monster Mania.
Right?
It's like he doesn't even know he's Jeff Daniel Phillips.
And what if he ends up being Herman Munster? Like, that's going to go up in value.
I wonder who Richard Brake's going to play in the Munsters.
Hmm.
Probably the villain. he's going to play the, what's his face? What's the name? What's that porn thing that he was talking about in Three from Hell? Where he's so-and-so doorman.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's going to be that guy in the Monsters.
Oh, no.
Okay. Nightmare 5 or Shocker? Your boy, Wes Craven.
I mean, Shocker's fun, but again, if you put the two in front of me, I'm watching Nightmare 5.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if you put, like, if you're at a convention and you put Peter Berg next to D.B. Sweeney, they would just point fingers at each other like they were the evil Ash and like the regular Ash because they're the same person? Nightmare 5 or Jason Takes Manhattan?
Nightmare 5 in a walk.
Nightmare 5 or Vampire's Kiss?
Vampire's Kiss.
And then lastly, Nightmare 5 or I, Madman. Okay.
That movie rules.
Yeah, I would go, I think just Pet Sematary over Nightmare 5, but I do like some of these other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, that was a fun game.
Yeah. Man, what a short show.
We really sped right through it. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, it was probably longer than the whole movie Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
It for sure is. You
know, how long was it?
We're at an hour 46 right now.
You want to vamp for 14 minutes? And
might
make
as
this,
well.
You know, in true Hollywood form, you know, make it a little bit extra long.
205, 210.
You know, if Fear Street can be at 115 minutes for no reason.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
that's another good thing about Pig, by the way. It's like 90 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. What? Okay, so we'll do our own equivalent of like 90s needle drops.
Okay.
Like, what 94 song do you like?
I don't know what songs came out in
94. What song in the 90s do you like?
I like a lot of songs from the 90s.
Well, we got 14 minutes.
I like so many of them now just for nostalgic purposes because it puts me back in high school, you know?
I went through this period where through an entire month of October, like even though I had oodles of like JB mixes to listen to, I could not stop listening to like the Scream 2 soundtrack like the entire month of October.
Interesting.
It's so good.
It's the one that ends with a Creed song, right?
No, that's 3.
Oh, sorry.
That's one where he's like, what?
Oh, Scream 2 ends with a Collective Soul song?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Are you upset that you missed the Scream marathon?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been there.
Yeah.
I bet you 3 even played there that night.
Do you like 3?
No.
No, I don't like 3 either, and people keep telling me 3 is actually good.
But... yeah, I don't get it either.
And
like,
I'm like, what? No. Have I told you about Nightmare 5?
Yeah, exactly. pot calling the kettle black. With the Scream series, like, it's hard to say this because they are, you know, they're by purpose ironic. But I think that 1 and 2 especially take it seriously. Like, there's stakes, like it's sad when people die, like,
yeah,
it's a movie that means it's earnest in that way, in its intent. I think 3 is just where it's like, we're deconstructing everything one extra level where it doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Because, like, you know, even if you want to have, like, the whole thing with her brother, which I think is stupid.
Terrible.
You could make that count emotionally if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. I don't think it works because, like, the whole rest of the movie is trying to be, like, a Scooby-Doo mystery.
Because of the whole thing, like, of it being on a film set and all that, where we have, like, two versions of every character.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's, like, the most E! Entertainment Network of the movies, if you know what I mean.
Right,
where it's just, like, more about...
Because of the Jules Asner cameo.
Oh, is she in it? I can't remember.
I feel like she is. Is she still married to Soderbergh?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. That's peak Nev, though. That's my favorite Nev.
Scream 3? Interesting.
Yeah, so...
I forgot what I was going to say about Scream. Oh, for me, it's like the Jay and Silent Bob cameo that tells me that, like, oh, okay, we've given up. We're fine putting these cartoon fictional characters inside what we want you to believe is a real story, you know?
Yeah, and it's also got, like, the quirky Carrie Fisher cameo where it's like, I can't remember if it's Fanboys or if it's Scream 3 while I'm watching it, where I'm just like, "This they did the same thing in Fanboys."
Right,
like,
right.
So, I don't know. But I do wish I was there. I wish I was there most of the time when I see what's playing at the New Beverly, because we don't have... We have a rep theater, but we don't have that type of programming.
And we had other rep theaters. We had the Portage and the Patio, and slowly they've all disappeared, and now the drive-ins aren't doing rep anymore, so it's just the Music Box, and it only does rep sometimes.
Yep.
I wish they would pivot to just being a rep theater, but I get it. That's probably a hard business model to sustain, especially for a theater that size.
Probably. If any theater could make it work, though, I think, like, they could, just because they're a destination... Just as the theater, like, as much as what's playing there.
So. That Twin Peaks show is sold out already.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I never watched the show, so when I saw Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, it just, like, left me cold. So.
Understandable.
So I didn't have, like, an urge to go to the theater. But I'm going to Music Box of Horrors, so if you are the person who leaves the 200th comment, that's a good place for us to meet, for me to give you the quiz.
I love that they have to leave the 200th comment and answer a quiz to get a VHS.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. Will you sign it?
Sure.
Okay.
I think
we should all sign it.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, we're ending this directly on the 2 minute or on the 2 hour mark.
Oh, okay.
Like, and even if it's not goodbye, like, we have to plan this out. We have to plan this out. It just stops. Okay, so when we did the 500th episode and people came out, you know, and it was great. Like, people were coming from out of state and, like, from Canada and everything. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Joel.
Like, everything was just, which, by the way, Joel's movie chair on YouTube, very funny. Joel, keep making those. They always make me laugh.
All right, check it out, everybody.
It was such like a weird out of body experience where, like, people are coming up and asking us to sign F This Movie posters.
Yeah.
And I realized that, like, that day I'm power mad and I want that again. Ooh. And, like, maybe we should get a table at Flashback Weekend and just, like, sign for, like, the two people who come to see, they'd be like, "Oh, it's the F This Movie table." And, like, we sign for them and it, like, makes our weekend. And, like, we're, you know, like, $1,000 in the hole for renting this table the whole weekend, but like we could do the Good Son quiz with them.
Mike and I were in line. Yeah. He was getting something signed by Nick Castle.
Yeah,
and there was a girl named Chris behind us in line, and we had talked to her a little bit. She had asked, like, "Do you guys know how much he's charging?" So I went up and looked, and then we were talking about what she was getting signed, and we had talked a little bit. And then Mike and I were talking, and he was telling a story, something that had to do with Junesploitation. And she heard the word Junesploitation. She goes, "Wait, are you guys F This Movie?"
Yeah.
And we said, "Yeah, we are." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Oh, I listened to Pure Cinema. They talked about you guys. They talked about Junesploitation.
Oh, nice.
So that's how I found the show." And that was super cool. So,
yeah.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris. There was another person on Saturday who was wearing an F This Movie shirt.
Yes, Matt Sollenberger.
Okay.
Matt Sollenberger.
We walked past each other, but I had the weirdest thing happen when I saw you. First, I didn't know who you were, but you were wearing an F This Movie shirt, and then I was just like, "Wait a minute, I'm not supposed to go up to the person and be like, I'm on F this movie. You're supposed to be like, are you Adam?
Right.
Which I didn't, I'm not saying like you're wrong for not doing that, but I'm just like, this was this weird like role reversal thing where I'm like, I don't know what my role is in this.
Sure.
So I was just like, oh, well, you know, and then my friend Nathan was just like, aren't you going to go like talk to somebody? He like is a fan of the site that you write for. And I got starstruck by our shirt. Like, I clammed up and I was just like, I don't know what to fucking say about F this movie.
He came over and said hi because Charlie was wearing his F this movie shirt. Yeah. So he came over and went, woo, F this movie. Yeah. And I said hi. And he said, I'm Matt Sullenberger. I'm like, oh my gosh, I totally know Matt Sullenberger. He invented human cigarette Christopher George.
Oh my God, Matt, I'm sorry I didn't meet you. Like, I was so fucking nervous. And then, like, I heard during the panel, Peter Cowper was like, I'm more nervous meeting you guys than you are meeting me. And I was just like, Peter Cowper gets it.
Peter Cowper is the nicest Canadian.
Yeah, when he said he's just like, yeah, I live up in the mountains in Colorado, I'm like, of course you do.
Right?
That's because you figured out life. Like, you know.
But he hasn't been back to Canada.
That is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
But he also changed his name. It was like,
yeah, some dodgy's going on there. Right.
Liam something? I can't remember the new name.
I won't. How are you doing on time?
Oh, we have about 5 minutes.
Okay. I don't want to name the celebrity, but there was one celebrity that I met there who, when I met them, it was sort of deflating because they took out like a wad of cash from their earnings for the weekend and was sort of like folding it and making like a money roll out of it. As I was standing there like waiting to get the autograph, which, by the way, there's another person who I met who, when I gave them the $40 to meet them, they like put it aside like right away. And they're just because it's like, no, it's not about that. I want to talk to you.
Right.
Bravo, that's the way to do it.
Who was that person?
That was Grant Kramer.
Okay. That person you can name drop.
Yeah.
Because he did the right thing.
Yeah. But the other person even was making jokes. He's just like, oh, I bet the IRS, I hope the IRS doesn't find out about this and all this stuff like that. And I'm just like, ugh.
Wah, wah.
Womp, womp. Not cool.
He did something nice for Mike's daughter, though. So
he did.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. No, I mean, everybody else, like, had the experience I was chasing, and I got commerce, I got Wall Street, I got the Oliver Stone version.
Money never sleeps.
It doesn't.
Erica was very taken with Grant Kramer and Suzanne Snyder during the Killer Clowns panel. She thought they were so like down to earth and normal. And
they just don't bring up Fools Rush In.
Apparently,
because that's Suzanne Snyder's kryptonite. Like F this movie is to me.
I'm excited because Deborah Voorhees, who was the Friday Five cast member that I probably talked to the most, has directed a movie, and one of the other cast members showed me the trailer.
Yeah.
And it looked good. It's called 13 Fanboy, and when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But then he's like, do you want to watch the trailer? I said, yeah, and it's like, it looks pretty awesome. It's got a ton of cameos from people in it. Dee Wallace has a big role, and Corey Feldman and a bunch of Friday people are in there.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for it. It comes out in October, and she's trying to get Mike and Mia to show it at the Midway.
Oh, cool.
Which would be cool, especially if she would come back out.
They're doing that, like, four-movie Dust Till Dawn thing at the Midway, which they haven't...
So far, all they've announced is Silent Night, Deadly Night, and
Blood-Sucking Freaks,
which I can't stand. So.
Yeah, yeah, so hopefully... I don't know. I always want to go out there, but it's, like, 2 hours, and it's just, like, there's got to be something. Like, last year, I couldn't go, but they were playing, like, Halloween 1, 3, 4, and 5 or something like that. It was crazy.
They did a whole Halloween marathon.
Maybe in October they'll do it. We'll see.
We'll see. I don't know.
I don't know either. How are we doing on time?
We got about 2 minutes.
Okay. I want to apologize for being so grumpy at the beginning of the show. I've just been going
2 hours in.
Yeah, I've been. If you like Fear Street, more power to you. Like the world.
A lot of people like Fear Street.
A lot of people like Fear Street. I wasn't calling anybody specifically out, even though I kind of did with the Rotten Tomatoes thing. I just had a job interview today, so like I'm kind of on edge.
Sure,
a lot of midlife crisis stuff happening with me.
You got to throw out like some hot takes right now because we need 200 comments. People need something to react to.
Oh God! All right, hot takes. Let's see. All right, I'm gonna bring up my 2021 movie list, and I'll give you hot takes. Okay, Nomadland sucks.
Okay, wow.
Nomadland really blows.
Oscar winner.
Yeah,
That you're slagging.
I'm noticing that the Cruella thing just might be a fetish. like it's this weird sex thing that I just wasn't aware of.
For specifically Cruella De Vil?
Just the whole vibe of it. Just okay. Everything. It started as an Emma Stone crush, but now it's just a lifestyle. Okay. So, yeah. What should we call it?
One minute.
Okay. Let's see here. Kid 90 was weird and gross. I didn't like that movie.
She videotaped her whole life like Val Kilmer.
She did, yeah. So it's like reverse Val.
And everybody died in that one.
Boogie is really funny. You guys should watch Boogie.
I haven't watched Boogie.
Yeah. Let's see here. Other hot takes. Let's see. In the Heights is silly. It's a silly movie.
Less than 30 seconds.
Okay.
With the theme music, we might already be at 2 hours.
Oh, jeez. All right. Sorry, everyone. This runs over 2 hours. I apologize. This was really fun. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Want to talk about Suicide Squad next week?
Yeah, sure. See you
then.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.